paper 12, section 5, which is old single column, page 134. Okay, so very much so. Remember that this is a pair of sections, you know, definitively a pair of sections. The section that we did last week, space and motion, is followed by space and time. There's obviously a little bit of, okay, so now here's how you think about it. Have you thought about looking at it like this? In terms of, you know, we tend to just let the words space and time roll off our tongue pretty easily. And so we'll bring in yes, but more fundamentally is space and motion. But you'll notice that they actually don't spend a lot of time on sort of belaboring the way we think about it, you know, yada, 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 yada. Have you thought about looking at it like this? They actually sort of almost immediately challenge you to take the notion of time way beyond anything that humans have ever done. To really put some meat on the bones of that concept. Okay? So let's get rolling with it here.
Section 5, Space and Time. Like space, time is a bestowal of paradise, but not in the same sense, only indirectly. Time comes by virtue of motion and because mind is inherently aware of sequentiality. From a practical viewpoint, motion is essential to time, but there is no universal time unit based on motion, except insofar as the Paradise Havona standard day is arbitrarily so recognized. The totality of space respiration destroys its local value as a time source.
Okay, just, you know, lots of little paragraphs so we can take it in little bites. Let's unpack it a little bit. That last little bit we've already referenced, you know, at least a couple times, I think, of the totality of space respiration destroys its local value as a time source. In other words, you're imagining, well, you've got this expansion, you know, that's going on right now, for instance. It's like, well, couldn't we just somehow, you know, get a handle on that, lay a ruler up to it, you know, and watch some expansion go past the ticks on the ruler and use that as a clock, you know, to tick off seconds? No, because everything is expanding, including the ruler that you'd lay up to it, you know. So there's no way to use that as some sort of a universal timepiece. That the tickingness, you know, the chronicity of that motion. Okay. So, and they said, you know, but you know, there is a desire to have something universal. So you arbitrarily take the time it takes for the inner Vona circuit to go around once, and just set that as a standard unit of time. Now the real, you know, philosophical meat of it. Like space, time is a bestowal of paradise. So you get that far, and you know you're thinking about that one paragraph back a little ways, you know. But remember, it said roughly, and immediately they bring that up, but not in the same sense, only indirectly. Like we were talking about all last week. What you literally have is space and motion. Okay? And you know, motion is directly. And then an abstraction drawn from that motion is time. So that, you know, it's in that sense only that time, you know, originates from upper paradise and space from lower. Okay. Actually, it's space lower and motion from upper. And think about how direct that is from our discussion last time, where we were reminding ourselves that that differentiation of total deity, capital T, into the infinitude and the infinity, that deity picture, is where we had that immediate twofoldness of space and motion, and that motion was so fundamentally tied to deity, the fact of deity, okay, and its innate doingness, okay, the doingness of deity, the facience of deity. Okay. So that whole bit about the Isle of Paradise, you know, and the two surfaces being related to that, it's like, well, okay, the Nether Paradise, they tell you, it's not a personal, spiritual, you know, deity domain. That's Upper Paradise. You know, and yeah, motion is so very fundamentally, stemming from the fact of deity. Yeah, see, that's why it's upper, and time is the chronicity of motion, hence you can indirectly say that time is related to the upper. You know, that's the actuality of the situation that they're alluding to here. And then, like we were just saying, time comes by virtue of motion. It's the chronicity of motion, the ongoingness of motion, and because mind is inherently aware of sequentiality. And we'll talk about that relationship in more detail a little bit later in this section here. But just think about that statement. Why would mind have an inherent awareness of sequentiality? Well, we know that mind is very much a phenomenon that is hard to understand without the notion of God. Modern scientists can convince themselves that matter just somehow magically is. Okay? And they can ignore mind, you know, and say that everything I'm doing right now is just the functioning of my brain. Okay?
It doesn't matter how matter came.
And again, why can they do that? Because the matter's magical. So, you know, if it's going to originate magically, why can't it function magically and do what I'm doing right now? But if you really get to the point where you say that there's a literal energy system called mind, and in animals even, not to mention humans, that agitant mind has an attribute called teachability. What on earth would give a mere energy system teachability? Okay, what have we ever observed about oxygen atoms or carbon atoms or molecules of any complexity that this says it's teachable? I mean, it's just, no, it has physical laws of property. Okay. Teachability? Now, if you really just stopped and think about the fact that you can train your dog, I mean, how is that possible? Where on earth does that incredible basic attribute of teachability come from? I mean, that's the influence of deity in relationship to that energy system. Okay. And deity functions, okay? Now, I'm coming full circle here around back to this, okay? Mind is inherently aware of sequentiality. We're not talking about mechanical mind here. We're talking about my mind, your mind, okay? Where does that mind so innately get this awareness of sequentiality? Ticka, 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 things go along in a sequence. It just is aware of that because it's getting its awareness ability, its ability to experience from the influence of deity, and deity just functions. It has a functioning nature. And so there's a sequentiality that's just inherent in its influence upon mind, making mind what it is, this thing that I'm conscious via. Okay? So mind has this innate awareness of sequentiality. And in the most basic sense, and that's really where the notion of time comes from, okay, is stemming from that more fundamental awareness of sequentiality. And we'll talk about that, like I said, in just a little bit. Okay, so that's what, okay, that's what's all in those first little statements, okay?
Could it have anything to do with the fact that mind comes from a place that is static, and therefore when things are in motion around it, it can't fail to notice the motion?
That's a higher thing that we'll get into here later too, that static thought that you have there. But initially, you know the mindal domain is very much this very, that is that associative domain. It's the real dynamic domain, between the two endpoints. No matter how you think about those endpoints, say they're fact and goodness, truth is the flow between them. You know, it's this fundamentally dynamic domain. See, just everything about that, you know, this block, this associative block in the threefold actuality, it has this dynamic flow-like whatnot, you know, sequentiality-ness to it, see? okay. All right, so now, you know, it should be very clear going forward that they want you to stop thinking of time as some absolute transcendent background. Motion is what's really in play. And so when you, and anytime you're thinking about time, anytime they use the word time, bring in those higher thoughts of sequentiality and motion to better appreciate more fundamentally what the picture is that's being described. Okay.
Space is not infinite, even though it takes origin from paradise. Not absolute, for it is pervaded by the unqualified absolute. We do not know the absolute limits of space, but we do know that the absolute of time is eternity.
See, it's this tiny little paragraph, because basically every word, you know, really needs to be carefully thought about. Okay, so space is not infinite. Even though it takes origin from paradise, not absolute, for it is pervaded by the unqualified absolute. Okay, now that's the philosophy of that sentence, to appreciate that. How this is also challenging us to not have such a simple-minded notion about space. Okay, if space was just, especially prior to general relativity, the way space was just thought of as a negative fact, like they were saying, you know, you basically, you know, what was that just back here? Space is, from the human viewpoint, nothing, negative. So it's just, you know, the extension. You weren't thinking of it as any sort of a substance of any sort. You know, it's just, you know, it's just the separation, you know. It's just a concept, really, you know, in that sense, a negative concept. Then, you know, if in that, from that starting point, you know, why not, you know, if you're going to reify space, if you're going to start to think about space as not being a negative, but being a positive, being a something of some sort, like in general relativity, where you turn it into this finite thing that you can warp and all this sort of stuff. But before you do that, you just are starting to think about it more literally. It's like, well, okay, so, I mean, it definitely seems to be behind everything. So, you know, I don't see why I can't just absolutize it, you know, that no matter what's going on, it just absolutely is a backdrop. And they say, no, it's not absolute. And why? Well, You know, here we are. We are going to recognize space as a literal fact, a thing, not the absence of things, but a thing. Yeah, it's obviously not absolute because, it's a literal thing that I'm going to pervade. I don't need to anthropomorphize it. We know that space is subservient, in a sense, to the fact of the unqualified absolute. The presence of the unqualified absolute isn't just filling the negative that is space. It's a space is a positive, and it pervading it, not like next to it or something, but in it, through it. See? I mean, so it's not absolute. It's being made relative.
Does it have boundaries?
Well, that's the next thing we'll get to in just a second. It's not like it's can stand apart. It's not like it can resist the fact of the unqualified absolute. It submits to it and gets pervaded by it. Okay, the Isle of Paradise is an absolute fact. It doesn't submit. It's an absolute. It stands apart, not relative. Okay, space is made to come into a relative relationship with the presence of the unqualified absolute. It gets pervaded by it. Okay, when you know that space is pervaded, that means it can't be an absolute. But you know it's very transcendent. What did we figure out? We figured out it was co-absolute. Okay, it's as close to being absolute as you can get without actually being absolute. We do not know the absolute limits of space. Okay, here's your question, Steve. See? They don't know. But just think about that statement. Okay, if it's this co-absolute fact, what's immediately transcendent of the co-absolute? The absolute. So there would be an absolute limit to the co-absoluteness. So you just think about that sentence more literally rather than, it's like, well, we just use the absolute word as an aggrandizement word. Who knows the absolute limit? No, technically, literally, it's like saying the supreme limits of the finite, the ultimate limits of the absonite, the absolute limits of the co-absolute. Okay? Yeah.
So space is co-absolute, mm-hmm. but the unqualified is absolute. So because they're kind of right next to each other, they can...
The foundation of, it's the unqualified absolute, but the presence is another matter. Okay, you can get into some, definitely in terms of the roots of that fact, they use the term absoluta. Okay, for space potency, but we've already noticed that they. Give you little hints about thinking about modifications of space potency. So obviously they're suggesting there's some downstepping, some modifying. It's not just sort of an immutable absoluta. But that's the roots of it because it's rooted in the unqualified absolute.
What about unpervaded space?
And that's
pre, right? It's coming down, and until it becomes pervaded, it...
Right, but again, see, most of the time when you're talking about pervaded space, what you're thinking of as pervading that space is primordial force, not space potency. Most of the time you just kind of put space potency in the background, and you don't really think about that little technical issue. And so when you're saying pervaded space and unpervaded space, you're meaning pervaded space is pervaded by the force charge of space, the primordial force, and unpervaded space isn't. See, but behind that, it gets a little bit subtler because you actually have space potency everywhere and in different states. And that's when they alluded to Here, the space potency is unpervadable, and here it's pervadable. Okay? And then, of course, there's mid-space, and, you know, and all, yeah. Yeah, it's...
Space potency is the presence of the unqualified.
Right, and it's just, yeah, but just to notice it, you can't think about it too simplistically. If you want to really sort the details out, there's variations of this presence of the unqualified absolute, which are a little bit hard to think about. But anyway, so, you know, they don't know the absolute limits of space, but they do know that the absolute of time is eternity. Now, see, that's kind of a fascinating thought. You know, have you ever tried to think about the relationship between time and eternity like that? That if you take the fact of time all the way to the point of absoluteness, it becomes eternity. Like taking matter all the way to the point of absoluteness and it becomes the absolutum of the aisle, for instance. Taking time all the way to absoluteness becomes eternity. Think about, you know, again, you know, the Isle of Paradise is motionless. Well, it's actually a little bit more. Paradise-ness is motionlessness, stasis. Okay. Paradise mind is absolute, for instance, they tell you at one point. In this sense, you know, paradise citizens, their consciousness is not in time, it's in eternity. It's not even in some time transcending thing. It's in eternity. It's in a domain of motionlessness, of absoluteness of time. See that you can say that all very directly now, because what did we just learn at the beginning? Time comes by virtue of motion. See, the two are fundamentally linked. Time is a chronicity of motion. So when you say that paradise is timeless and spaceless, when you're saying it's timeless, so you're saying it's because there's motionlessness there, see? And it's like, oh yeah, that's right, they say that too. Yeah, see, it's saying the same thing.
All motion is volitional.
Right, see, really more fundamentally, it's motionless. And because it's motionless, therefore it's timeless, because time comes by virtue of motion. See? And so, when you finally can go to paradise as a citizen, this is what you have to achieve. Right now, you have a mind of motion. I mean, so much so that they tell you when you really kind of fully get it turned on in the next life, we call the consciousness of that mind moda, i.e. motion. This is literally the word motion in Latin, inherent motion. Okay, you have very much a mind of motion. You have to transcend a mind of motion in order to have full consciousness on the aisle. You have to have a mind of motionlessness, whatever the heck that is. And what does that even mean? You're going, because I thought it was all about sequentiality, and isn't that like fundamentally a motion-like thing, sequentiality? The only way you can begin to sort of differentiate is, we know experiential sequence. Paradise mind, or the mind that you'll finally be able to wrap your mind around, to be there in a full sense, you have to come into relationship with existential sequence. An eternal sequence. A sequence that just is. It's not experiential, it just is. Yeah, and that sounds like a non sequitur, but that's the challenge, is to begin to reflect on that. It's like, wow, that's really different. You know, if they take you there now, you go there as a time conscious being. You have to transcend time consciousness. You have to transcend a mind of motion to fully engage what's there. Yeah.
where does infinity come? When I think of a limitation, I think of eternity being the limit of the master universe. So then, and then beyond that is infinity. So is that the boundary they're referring to? Or I'm just trying to encapsulate something.
See, I'm going to go too far on that, but just remind yourself of how much the Revelators reworked the word infinity too. I mean, here we're talking about how they're reworking the word time and eternity too at the same time. they reworked the word infinity too. You know, right now the word infinity pretty much just means, well, you know, you have a ruler, and if the ruler just keeps on going forever, then, you know, the end of the ruler goes to infinity. They say, well, actually, let's start with, let's use the word infinity for the totality of reality. It's like, well, okay, I guess that's kind of like my extension space infinity. I'm just thinking about it less in the negative and more in the positive. But then they really flip it around and say, well, now we're going to use the word capital I infinity, which is the functioning of deity on the infinite level. And then there's the divinity of that functioning of deity, lowercase I infinity. The divinity of deity functioning on the infinite level is lowercase I infinity. And that's actually the same as that, as where lowercase I infinity means the totality of reality. Wow, that is really, yeah, that's two different viewpoints on it, bottom up and top down. Is it infinity reality or reality infinity? Well, it's both. if you really think about what they're doing to the word infinity too, they're totally blowing that out of the water too from any historical perspective. See, they're trying to get us, like they just said, with both space and time, to take them out of the negative and basically just the abstract, and to think about them literally. In the case of space, telling us, yeah, it's a literal thing, just way more transcendent than anything you've ever imagined. And time, not really a direct literal thing like you've been wanting to think about it. Motion is the direct literal thing, and time is an abstraction relative to that. They're trying to get you to completely change your entire worldview. I mean, you need to just completely let go of any way that any human has ever thought about, you know, what time means, for instance. And we'll talk about that a little bit more when we go forward. That's the challenge. Don't expect to go, oh, okay, that's clear now. Just really challenge yourself to not put new wine in old wineskins. Try your best to let go of any old way you've ever tried to think about these things.
In regard to motion, will we be able to move about?
By volition. Yeah, you'll be able to move about in the existential domain, but obviously in a way that we can't even comprehend right now. And they say it's purely a volitional thing. It's not a, you know, hop on a horse and ride sort of a thing. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, it's a little hard to know exactly how you're supposed to think about it, but
you're not going to feel encumbered.
Right. Yeah. You'll be free at last. There's no doubt about that. So the absolute of time is eternity. It's just an amazing thought to just kind of let rattle around in your head. The absolute of time is eternity. All right.
Time and space are inseparable only in the time-space creations, the seven super-universes. Non-temporal space, space without time, theoretically exists, but the only true non-temporal place is paradise area. Non-spatial time, time without space, exists in mind of the paradise level of function.
Okay, so another title. Everything here, guys. Let's try to slowly unpack all of that. Okay, it starts out with a pun, basically. You know, time and space are inseparable only in the, when you take the two words and stick them together with a hyphen. It's kind of hilarious. They're inseparable. They're glued together with a hyphen. You got to chuckle. duh. but of course, what they, the whole point is just, it's a universe of motion. Like we've tried to say, and the simplest way to kind of appreciate a sentence like that is, okay, well, if it's a universe of motion, I don't quite know what that means. What do I know about motion? Well, I describe it with a speed, which is a distance divided by a time. It's space divided by time. Oh, yeah, they're really inseparable. They're reciprocally related. I guess I kind of understand why they're saying that. They're saying that out here, they're fundamentally linked together because it's a universe of motion. Okay, now non-temporal space without time, theoretically exists. Okay, like we said, the actual twofold is space and motion. Okay, so theoretically, you have space here and motion over here. Theoretically, you have non-temporal space. Okay, translate that more precisely. You have space not without time. Space without motion.
Where nothing's happening.
Right. So, theoretically, there's space without motion. So, like I said, just challenge yourself to use the previous section to take the wording up a notch, not think about it in the old space-time dichotomy. Okay? Space without motion is what you're literally thinking of there. That theoretically exists. But, even when you're talking about mid-space, they say, it's relatively motionless. Okay, so theoretically, you can just think of space separated from motions. Okay, so here's space without motion. All the motion's over here and all space is over here in the picture. Okay, but in terms of implementation, there's always some, that's always relatively quiescent, not absolutely quiescent or something, so that's what they're getting at there. So you can understand that if you just say, oh yeah, can I think of space without motion? Yes, but only theoretically, because everything they describe has got some measure of motion in it, no matter how tenuous, ethereal. But the only truly non-temporal place is paradise area. Okay, so but the only truly motionless place is paradise. And why did they italicize area? Because they think, did you notice we didn't use the word space here? Because there isn't, paradise is spaceless. There's no space on paradise. So you can't use the word, so to describe the separation between things, you can't really technically use the word space because you're using it in the old-fashioned way.
Anthropomorphizing
there. It has a separation. It has an area. It's a spaceless area, though. Wow, that's In other words, it's a separation that transcends the substance that normally is keeping me separated from my cup over there. There's this space substance actually between the two of us. It's keeping us apart. You don't have space keeping you away from something else on paradise. You're free of that, that fetter, now the only thing that separates you from something else is your will. So no wonder they require a pretty high bar to be reached before they let you on. Right. You don't even get into the Havona, let alone onto paradise, right? Okay. We talk about how matter is a gift of grace. That it keeps us from going faster than we should be, the boat anchor of matter. But to actually start thinking of something as rarefied as space is getting in your way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would get in your way if it was on the aisle. That's why it's not there. That's how high you are. See? You have to go beyond the co-absoluteness of space. You have to have absolute mind on the aisle. A mind of motionlessness. Whatever the heck that means. You have to go to the absolute of time. You have to go to eternity. Okay? All right. Then the rest of it. Non-spatial time. Time without space. Okay, so what do they mean there? In other words, not where we have the words space and time stuck together by a hyphen. Okay? We're trying to think about something besides that. Yeah, that's right. The more fundamental thing is just the raw sequentiality that you have an awareness of. So that's what you mean by time without space. See, that exists in mind of the paradise level of function. You go to this spaceless domain, but there is still sequentiality. It's just, it's existential sequence. And not experiential sequence, and you just have to try to somehow stretch to figure out what that actually means. But that's what it is. You know that's what it is logically, even though you can't really wrap your mind around it. That's what it is.
Sequence that's free of motion.
Sequence that's free of motion, and it transcends experience. It just is. Yeah, man. It's an eternal sequence. They point that out. Remember that we can already actually be. If you start to think, it's like, well, actually, now that I think about it, I do have a bit of an ability to liberate myself of the space and time words being hyphenated together. Your mind does have, see, because your mind is coming down from above. It's not just a phenomenon of the little lowercase t in a physics equation. I mean, it knows things beyond that. It knows sequentiality. And if you take delight in cultivating a higher mind, it can know very high sequentiality. I mean, your mind is directly engaged by a thought adjuster, for instance, who has this very transcendent mind. Has a very transcendent relationship with sequentiality.
So when we're straying in step with this higher reality, we're recognizing the sequentiality.
Yeah.
We're not creating that.
There's, and you might even say, I'm striking step with the greater order of things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's why it is transcendently valid to call them the first source and center, second source and center, third source and center. There's a sequence there that has nothing to do with time, i.e., it doesn't have anything to do with motion, even. It transcends that. It just is. There is a sequence there. When you're at the center of the upper surface of the aisle, there's a sequence that just is. The third source and center is first. The second, the first. You have to go through it in that sequence. That sequence just is.
Or the Trinity shell.
Yeah, and outside. Yeah.
So are you saying that you can have sequence without either time or space?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what they're getting at. And the fact that you actually can. It's not that hard to actually go, that doesn't sound illogical, actually. It sounds like there's a logical sequence that transcends time and motion that you can just recognize. You have a reality response to it. It sounds real. They can tell you that they're the first, second, and third source and center, and if you really reflect on them, you go, that has nothing to do with them just telling a temporal fairy tale for my benefit. No, that's just the way they are. Yeah, that's how they're related one to the other.
until we progress to a point where we can grasp a cosmic mind, just our adjutant minds have that ability.
No, not your adjutant mind. It's only because you have the three cosmic intuitions. Yeah, three cosmic intuitions. Yeah, from coming down from cosmic mind in the Holy Spirit. Okay, that's why you can just know that. You know, remember, it's your logical acumen, that first cosmic intuition. The only reason that the truth of the word logical is in our consciousness is because we have the first cosmic intuition. If that first cosmic intuition there wasn't there, there would be no recognition of a fact that has been given the name logical. That's where that comes from. We wouldn't have common sense. We wouldn't have the word self-evident. We wouldn't just know that, yeah, that's just the way it is. That's logical. It just feels right.
If there is that other sequentiality which is without space and without time, it's very comforting to think that it would be an existential thing that everyone would agree to and not just some chaos that was of everyone's own making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, effects follow causes. That's just the way it is. It has nothing to do with my, you know, my wishful thinking, you know, or my subjectivity, my relativity. I mean, you know, it's why if you just play with it mathematically with the equations of special relativity, you say, well, what if? Let's just imagine I made something go faster than the speed of light. What happens? Well, what happens is causes follow effects. It's like, well, that's illogical. That's I mean, you know, so what, you know, what that's telling you is it isn't just some arbitrary speed limit. I mean, it's the foundation upon which a logical reality is built. If you try to go beyond that, you go into an illogical domain. You go into an unreality. It's like, well, but I can add I can take 299792458 meters per second and add 1 meter per second to it. No, you can't, because it becomes so. But why not? Well, I must be looking at things totally backwards. Yeah, zero isn't the starting point. And for some reason you can't go faster than some arbitrary speed limit. That must be the starting point. Let's call that one. All I can really do is start at unity, first source and center of all things and beings. I can start with unity, and I can downstep from there to what experientially is what we call zero, the absence of speed. Okay, that's the truth of the universe. It starts at unity and goes down to zero. It doesn't start at zero and go up and magically stop somewhere for no reason, and etc.
So the idea of sequentiality without space or time.
Yeah.
Could one think about that as you have to understand those sequences in that order? You couldn't understand the second sequence without first understanding the first one?
There's no relativity. That's just the way they are. That follows that. Period. Absolutely. I mean, it's not a matter of perspective. See, you have to get to that point where you have paradise mind is absolute. You have to get to that point where you see it without any relativity, where you can engage it absolutely as it is. That is related to that, just that way, period. It's like, well, I don't like it that way. Well, it doesn't matter what you like. That's just the way it is. Yeah, right. But kind of a fun thought. Just you can just kind of feel how it kind of plays in your mind. It's like, well, that's kind of cool. I want to let that.
So the important point they're trying to impress is sequence.
Right.
The sequence you just mentioned with the order that everyone proceeds to discover the Father.
The book reveals truth. If it has a time sequence and a caveat about, now don't take this literally, because of course this happened you know, before there was time, before there was motion. It's like, well, so you're telling me the book is, what you're about to say is erroneous. No, you know it's not. It reveals truth. See, that's what you said. Oh, I understand now. See, that's what's going on in your head. I understand. The sequence is true. The initial simplistic time thing, like on, you know, my watch, is a crutch. As soon as you can let go of the crutch, do it. Embrace the transcendence of the sequence. The sequence is absolute. It just is. Yeah, and it can feel true to you because you have a reality response. It's like, you know, I can just think through that. It just, it feels right. That's what you, you know, they're challenging you to let go of what you don't really need. You think you need these things, but you don't really. You have the ability to begin to let go of some of these crutches. Okay?
Like that unique personality.
Yeah. That, see, and of course, you know, that's what it means to realityize yourself, is, you know, it's to wrap a thread of your nature around the infinite eternal ellipse, to make it a timeless, spaceless fact.
Somehow this is fundamental to understanding the Trinity, because it talks about, what is it, the will, the action,
the purpose,
and the purpose
of the paradise,
of the Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those, but it's a sequence. It's not a motion.
You know, the relationship of one to two to three to one is a sequence.
Yeah.
Like, see, I was saying, see, the, you know, we've begun to talk about this sequences and relative to deity when we're talking about total deity. You know, and what I was just saying, you know, you're thinking about where the sequentiality that's inherent in mind. You know, where does it come from? It comes from deity. See, that's what I was trying to get at. There's a sequentiality. You know, because You say that what deity does is it functions. Well, there's no way to think about functioning without that ing on the end of that word. The functioning, the sequentiality. Okay? You know, doingness is, you see, even beingness, there's an ing there. The stasis of deity. These are the seven functional levels of total deity. This is, level one is the stasis of deity. The functioning is stasis. It's like, well, how do I understand stasis and functioning? Being. There's an ing there. Okay? Doing and being, they both have, there's a functioning there, a very transcendent functioning that goes beyond motion.
I have a good friend in California, he's a little bit into Buddhism, and everybody's heard the phrase, don't just sit there, do something.
Mm-hmm.
So he sent me a card one time and opened it up, and had a monk kind of a guy meditating and said, don't just do something. Sit there.
But one must do something as well as be something. Yeah. All right. Let's get some more here.
The relatively motionless mid-space zones impinging on paradise and separating pervaded from unpervaded space are the transition zones from time to eternity. Hence the necessity of paradise pilgrims becoming unconscious during this transit when it is to culminate in paradise citizenship. Time-conscious visitors can go to paradise without thus sleeping, but they remain creatures of time.
He says, now we've talked about that. Now you can understand what that really is about, see? You have to turn off the mind of motion. You have to go unconscious. And you have to be born again into a whole new consciousness that is, you know, has a relationship to existential sequence. Like I said, you could, I guess, call it the mind of motionlessness. Or, I mean, whatever the heck you would call this. But the mind of motion has to be turned off, and you got to go beyond it. You know, so when you're going there, you know, when you're on the three circuits of Havona, where you find the infinite spirit and the eternal Son and the universal Father, and you know, and they take you to paradise, and you achieve this. So you're going there as a time conscious visitor. So you know, it should be less surprising to you why there's some challenge to what you're attempting to do there. You have a very limited relationship with the fact of paradise. I mean, most of it is not even going to be visible, you know, or tangible at all.
How can they go to paradise? I don't understand that.
You can go there. You have enough. Well, I mean, the adjuster see is, of course, very key to this. You have enough of an internal nature that you can find the three persons in spite of the fact that you really don't have much, you know, awareness of what's really on the aisle. Yeah. But once you finally go there, you know, as a... You know, with citizenship and become a finality. Okay, now it's like, you know, think about what it'll be like that when you actually go there that time. It's like, wow, look at all the stuff that I couldn't see before. You know, all of a sudden you'll be able to see the things that are there. And right.
Apparently we have the ability to then return to time consciousness because we have to be sent.
Well, see, what you're really doing, you're augmenting. Remember, you still have everything that you've brought up with you. You've just added a mind of motionlessness on top of that, and you can downstep yourself back into relationship with time. That's still bottled up inside of you. You didn't cut it off. Yeah. Yeah. And so beings that come down from paradise, you know, have to do just the reciprocal. They start with the top part and they have to add the lower parts. We're starting with the lower parts, and we have to keep adding stuff on top. Yeah. Okay. So now you appreciate it a little bit better. See, that's what that's about. That whole bit of, you know, just understanding technically why you have to go unconscious. You've got to shut that down, and you've got to take it up a notch. And then that which was shut down, you can turn back on again yourself. See, and I was like, whoa, that almost sounds a little bit like what Jesus said about, you know, laying down his life. Right. See, you're getting to the level as a finaliter where you have some real control over things here. You are starting to be able to move vertically like Michael was in his incarnations, you know. It's like, well, I could function here or here or here. You know, you'll have that full vertical spectrum within you, and you can choose where you function. Yeah.
Relationships to time do not exist without motion in space, but consciousness of time does. Sequentiality can consciousize time even in the absence of motion. Man's mind is less time-bound than space-bound, because of the inherent nature of mind. Even during the days of the earth life in the flesh, though man's mind is rigidly space-bound, the creative human imagination is comparatively time-free. But time itself is not genetically a quality of mind.
Okay, so we've just, you know, that's what we've been talking about. See, that's, we've already kind of just recognized this experientially. It's like, wait a minute, I actually am thinking I understand this sequentiality thing as being the more transcendent fact. You know, and they just remind you that, but time itself is not genetically a quality of mind. What is? Sequentiality. Yeah. Yeah. That's inherently in mind. Yeah. So again, just notice it. The section title is Space and Time, but really what they want you to do is every time that you use the word time, replace it by the truer picture. Okay, is it motion or sequence? You know, it depends on the circumstance. What's the more appropriate way? The the more fundamental way to talk about that circumstance, instead of using the word time as kind of this fuzzy term, like we tend to use it.
My hour hasn't come, it's because it's out of order.
Yeah, there's a sequence that must be. Yeah.
Right in the middle of that, man's mind is less time-bound than space-bound.
Mm-hmm. Well, even in the biggest sense of your adjutant mind right now, what are the limits of that adjutant mind?
Your brain.
The boundaries of the local universe in Abaddon. I mean, obviously, we're even more circumscribed than that. It's only a rare circumstance that you actually kind of navigate in the mindal energy system and pick up something else that sort of isn't just like here, you're very space-bound. We've mentioned this before. I mean, you think about, as you go up in consciousness, you go out, you become less space-bound. But the life carriers design you initially to be very space-bound for sanity's sake. I mean, if I was trying to think right now with all of your other thought, all of you guys' thoughts in my head at the same time, I mean, would I be able to put a sentence together? No. Yeah. I'd be insane. There's no way, my consciousness, the part of the energy system, mindal energy system that I'm using needs to be very space limited initially for my sanity's sake. When I'm on the aisle, it's very not space-bound for no other reason. It's spaceless there. I mean, that's how not space-bound it is. So think about what your consciousness is like. It's not just you on the aisle. You have this full awareness of all the thoughts around you.
But they're all not only harmonious, they're unity.
Right.
They're unified.
And remember when we were talking about the upper surface? How many beings... think about the kind of focus you have to have when you're in intimate contact with so many beings that we hardly have numbers to words that describe numbers that big. Okay, that's how many people's consciousness is intimately in touch with you when you're there, and you can still focus. Because you have an absolute dimension to your personality. And boy, do you need it there. You seriously have to be using that absolute dimension to stay focused and not just get sucked into the consciousness of everything else there.
There has to be this tension between your individuality and the unity.
Mm-hmm. And you play it masterfully, the harmony, with which you play that.
On paradise, in the core of the finality, we're ushered into the core. And then we go back out, we go back into time space, we go back into the super universes for a period of time, do we not?
Oh, yeah, for a very long period of time.
Well, what sort of a trans, that's going to be a transition in and of itself, to have to come back to this.
But of course, remember, you're out there. That helped, but still, when they talk about the finaliters, at the local system headquarters, are you rubbing elbows with them on the first mansion world? No, they're a pretty ethereal fact, okay? You occasionally get to go to a place, and with great effort, they visualize them for you, you have a relationship to things down below. But we won't have a relationship to a thing as literally as high as they are without a lot of downstepping help. They see you, but you don't see them without a lot of help.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why I simply do not understand this last sentence in this prior paragraph. Leaping in there. But a time-conscious visitors can go to paradise without thus leaving fun of them. What the hell for?
We're not going to see any anyway.
No, you will. You see, you're trying to get. You can't magically have that final transition. You have to incorporate these facts within you, and the only way to do it is step by step. You have to go up the staircase of the sevenfold. What you're doing is those last three steps of the sevenfold. You know, you're doing on the aisle.
Or my misunderstanding was that I thought before we could leave Havona and go into paradise, we went through the transitional sleep.
No, you.
Then all the visitors' deaths.
You'll go there. Yeah, right. Because that's the only way that you can, you know, achieve what you have to do. Remember the on the first and second circuits. You're doing that final stuff that you need to do to be able to take that last step. But on the third, the fourth, and the fifth circuits, you have to go there as a visitor to achieve what you need to do for those three circuits. Yeah. Fifth, fourth, third is the Spirit, the Son, the Father. So there's two circuits on each side of that. You know, two things building up to that, and then two things building upon that. Yeah. Okay, let's see. All right, I think we did everything there. So let's just... Okay, so now this next little bit, this is where it gets fun.
Okay. There are three different levels of time cognizance. 1, mind-perceived time, consciousness of sequence, motion, and a sense of duration. 2, spirit-perceived time, insight into motion Godward and the awareness of the motion of ascent to levels of increasing divinity. 3, personality creates a unique time sense out of insight into reality, plus a consciousness of presence and an awareness of duration.
Okay, let's understand this now. Okay. There are three different levels of sequentiality cognizance. Okay, that's what that opening thing actually says. Okay, let's take them one at a time. Okay, now we're talking about cognizance, so obviously the mind is where we, you know, where our vantage point is for thinking about what they're talking about here. So we're in the domain of mind, where our consciousness is. What is the first things that we have access to as we engage that fact of our consciousness in mind, the mindal energy system? Well, they told you that inherently in that is sequentiality. So the first thing, consciousness of sequence. Okay, so that just is, that's just... There's this sequentiality that's just inherent in the functioning of mind. Okay? Well, let's see. First of all, mind is above the physical things. So it's a vantage point when I'm in mind, and I can look down upon physical phenomena. What am I going to see? Well, it's a universe of motion. Okay? See, so I'm going to have consciousness of the motion down there, the physical motion. You know, and when you're doing physics equations, you know, you'll have a lowercase t. You know, there's a time thing that we use to describe, you know, what's going on down there in the physics stuff. Okay? But now we're recognizing that it's not... space and things and time. Okay, it's actually motion, and we're conscious of the motion down there and the chronicity of that motion down there. Okay. Now think about what they said up front. They said, time comes by virtue of motion and because mind is inherently aware of sequentiality. Okay, this is where we're putting those two together. I have this inherent awareness of sequentiality, and I'm looking at motion, I'm seeing that it's ongoing, I take my sequentiality awareness and I overlay it on the ongoingness of that motion, and I go, oh, tick, 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 tick. Let's see, what am I going to call that? Let's call that time. See, that without the sequentiality, you couldn't, you know, create this abstraction from that motion of time, the timeness, you know, the temporality of that physical motion. Okay, so you can do that. You can see it as having a temporality. You can overlay your sequentiality upon that motion. But you can take it a notch further, because this mind domain where you're viewing this from is above. It's transcendent of the tick, 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 tick. It's not down there where all it is okay, there's this tick, and then the next tick, and that's your awareness is just moment to moment. You know that even when you go beyond the first three agitants, you begin to go out of the moment in a consciousness. You begin to have kind of a trans-animal awareness. Okay, so you can you're standing above it and you're going, okay, there's a sequentiality and it's ticking along. You know, there's like a duration I'm aware of here. There's a span of sequentiality. Okay, so you can have the notion, the consciousness of duration, because mind is transcendent to matter. The word duration wouldn't be in the dictionary if your consciousness was just the functioning of brain. Obviously, there wouldn't even be a dictionary, but you know, you get what I mean. Okay. See, it's that fundamental fact that mind is transcendent of matter, is above matter, is has this higher vantage point, and can watch its tick ticking, and take a chunk of the tick ticking, a duration, a period. Okay. That's so you're transcendent of the moments. Yeah? That's because mind is above matter. Yeah.
And yet, we all know how it is when we get really focused, concentrating on something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people talk about time standing still, and I can't believe it's 5 o'clock already.
Yeah.
You know, you've gone from 1 to 5, and in a sense, you've lost that sense of duration.
Comparatively time-free. So just like they just said in that previous paragraph, see, we have all kinds of experiences of the fact that we can function really way above the tick, 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 tick of that physical stuff that we're looking at down there. We're not locked into the second hands down there. You know, we can practically go into a timeless state of consciousness right now. Mm-hmm. And now when I remember, we talk about our spiritual consciousness has no awareness of time. See, that's the thing. I mean, you know, it's your spiritual consciousness is a way downstepped. You know, your initial spiritual consciousness is a way downstepped expression of eternity. You know? Okay. So that's the basics initially there. There's one other thing in play. What about just in mind itself? What about just in mind itself? Is there an inherent sequence just in mind that I could attach that sequentiality to, that I could overlay that awareness of sequentiality onto? Progressing mind. There's a fact that exists in mindal energy called progressing, an ing. You can have an awareness of progressing. Remember how the meaning of life is its adaptability, the value of life is its progressibility. You know, spirit has a potential in it, progressibility, that gets actualized down into mind, that makes mind progressing. So you're down there in that mind, you can be aware of progressingness. Okay. Go to the next notch up, it should be just immediately obvious then. Oh, yeah. Spirit perceived time. That's the next higher notch. Insight into motion Godward and the awareness of the motion of ascent to levels of increasing divinity. That. What's the ing there? What's above progressing is perfecting. You have progressing mind and perfecting spirit. I can be aware. I can overlay my sequentiality on that. Perfecting. See? That's what they're describing there. They're describing perfecting.
So the mind does dual duty, like we should know.
The mind can look down, it can look within, it can look up.
And overlay sequence on
yeah.
both those.
Yeah, rooms. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So
growth consciousness.
Yeah. Right. You go, wait a minute, I've grown. You lay the sequentiality awareness on it. It's like, wait a minute. There's perfecting this there. Yeah. Okay, so I mean, what? See, you get my point. I mean, this is about much more than just understanding, you know, the whole bit about the physical T on the equations. Okay, take it to its media. You're progressing, perfecting. What's that third notch? Personality creates, the italicized creates. Ah, yeah, you have personal creativity. What is the literalness of personal creativity? Okay. We've talked about this. It's taking the threefold actuality and harmonizing.
Oh, yeah. That's
there's another thing, very transcendent, that I can overlay my awareness of sequentiality on, another ing. That's above perfecting, harmonizing. Okay? Harmonizing. And see, but I can do that because I have personal creativity. I choose that ing's existence. Okay? And it's about a threefold actuality. There's three things in the little statement. Yeah, blank plus blank and blank. Right? Okay, so just think about it. Okay, so a unique time sense out of harmonize the threefold actuality. You know, it's individuality, associativity, unity, things, meanings, values. That's what I mean. Okay, so what do you have here? Insight into reality. You know, it's even capital R reality, which means infinity reality, the totality of reality. An insight into the facts. You know, a direct recognition of genuine individuality. No figment. The facts of reality. Yeah?
Would that insight be the recognition of the sovereignty of God?
Well, whatever, yeah. It's a three, you know, you have threefold insight, but just the insight, see?
Yeah.
Of the facts. Whatever facts they are, any facts you want to think of, the facts of reality. Okay, you recognize that, you know of them, you know they're all there. There's this individuality, this you have them all laid out there, all these different individualities. You have awareness of individuality, a recognition of it, an insight into it, plus a consciousness of presence. You know, like the presences we've been talking about with deities, omnipresence and things like that. Okay, not individuality, presence, yeah. Unity.
Yeah.
Okay? You have a direct, solid, objective recognition of the individualities, and you overlay a direct recognition of a unity presence that spreads throughout all of that. And the association between the two. You know, because those at individuality, that's motion. It's the universe of motion. Okay? And what can really link that I am consciousness, you know, a consciousness of presence. I am amongst all of this. It's got to be something that kind of is between the moment and eternity, a duration. Okay? See, so that associativity, see, and the awareness of duration. Over this span, I am present with all that motion. And not just conceptually, but literally. You have harmonized the three together within you. You've used your personal creativity to create a tri-unity. And so you brought all that together, and it's an ing thing. If not for no other reason, what's part of the system is the motion of the individuality. You set this whole thing is in motion. It's a harmonizing phenomenon. Okay, that's that very high sense upon which you're overlaying that sequentiality. And this is where we've tried to get ourselves to recognize when all you have is the revelation of the Father, the notion of perfection is an endpoint. But think about what they tell you. Like, in order to get into Havana, to start whatever the heck you do there, in order to get in, you have to have perfection of purpose. You have to have perfect consecration of your will to the perfect will of the Father. You're done with that. Yeah. It's like, well, I thought that's what the whole thing was, you know, and that's all. No, that's just step one. Okay?
Putting up the main
temple. Right. Okay? Or think about a spirit-fused mortal. They ascend up to the local universe headquarters. And they're inducted into the Nebadon core of perfection. And then do they just like go into suspended animation until the end of the grand universe age? No. They can, it's like, well, what are they doing after perfection? Well, it says, you know, they go out into service and they work and work and work. And then finally, you know, they've penetrated enough of the horizontal nature. See, they went vertical and then they went horizontal. They've penetrated enough of the horizontal nature of the local universe that they're in that they can be inducted into the core of completion. Okay. When the grand universe is settled in light and life, we describe that as completeness. Okay. When the harmonizing of the finite is complete. See, perfection is just the beginning. Once you've got perfection of purpose, now you can truly begin completing, the process of completing, the harmonizing. Okay? The real personal spiritual ascension begins once you can build upon your consecration to the Father. Once you, then you can really start your relationship with the Mother. And you achieve that. And as a finaliter, you can start to do Mother things like being a Trinitizer. That's what, you know, that's what Havana is about. Yeah. All right. See, it's already right here. Going beyond the awareness of perfecting, above that is harmonizing. The Father's the potential for harmony, but who's the actuality of harmony?
The Mother.
The actuality of harmony. The presence of the cosmos, the universal harmony, is the Mother. God within, God of immanence.
In Him we move and have our being. In her
yeah.
We move and have our being.
Right. Like they tell you up in the Supreme Papers, well, now technically, let's get the little, yeah. Yeah. Right. okay.
We live and move and have our being.
Yep.
So you do perfection, and then harmonizing, and then
no.
On to completion?
No, it's progress. So those three levels, you know, just in and of the levels there, the ing is progressing, perfecting, harmonizing. Those are the three sequences that you can be aware of, cognizant of. See? There are three different levels of sequentiality cognizance. Progressing, perfecting, and harmonizing. Okay. And the fifth epical revelation should solidly get you into the real, genuine literalness of what perfecting is. And then it takes you up in the other notch that hasn't been revealed to mankind before. The harmonizing level.
They call it unique. So.
Yeah, because personality is absolutely unique. Each of us can create a unique harmonizing sequence that no other being can create. No one can take the threefold actuality and weave it together like you can. But it's sad to record that so few persons take the light in trying to do what no one else in the universe can. They're content to just do what any old thing can. I mean, potted plants can.
They sell themselves.
Chimps can. Okay? Yeah. Take it up a notch. Yeah. Okay? All right. Okay, so now that give you see a little bit about the animal thing. You know, we naturally started talking about them. So they address that.
Unspiritual animals know only the past and live in the present. Spirit indwelt man has powers of prevision, insight. He may visualize the future. Only forward-looking and progressive attitudes are personally real. Static ethics and traditional morality are just slightly superanimal. Nor is stoicism a high order of self-realization. Ethics and morals become truly human when they are dynamic and progressive, alive with universe reality. The human personality is not merely a concomitant of time and space events. The human personality can also act as the cosmic cause of such events.
Okay, so let's unpack that a little bit. Now we're talking about ethics and morality. But see, they want you to use what has seemed kind of abstract, perhaps, you know, exciting maybe, but a bit on the abstract side up to this point. It's like, now, like I said, take it up a notch. Take the way you think about things up a notch here. Okay, so unspiritual animals know only the past and live in the present. You're saying, I mean, they're basically an in-the-moment phenomenon. But if it's a higher animal,
like a cat.
You know, there can be the fourth adjutant and the fifth adjutant that have a measure of long-term consciousness. But think about what kind of a long-term consciousness. It's from the moment they're in backwards, and that's it. They can have a consciousness, you know, that goes a little bit into the past if they're up to fourth or fifth adjutant level. You know, if they're an insect, no. Okay, they're purely in the moment. Okay, but
when I leave for work in the morning, my cat knows I'm coming home.
Right, but why? But it knows you're coming home. But why? How? That's a great example of what they're wanting you to do, is to rethink that. To not go, wait a minute, I don't believe that. No, you have an experience, now re-understand it. You know that what you're thinking of is not false, that happens. How does that happen? Does it happen because the cat is actually a human and has foresight? Or is it because it has the second adjutant?
It has
memory and teachable mind and the ability to associate, you know, that when you leave, later you come back. It associates those two things. But it doesn't think forward. It's just a simple in-the-moment memory of that association. It doesn't take comfort, you know, and knowing that, you know what I mean? See, it doesn't think, you know, forward in time like that.
It doesn't spend the day worrying.
Right, right. Or that either, see. You know, why do humans worry? Because they can go forward in time. Why do you dread? Because you can go forward in time, et cetera. See, you know, animals, they're not going to dread like that. What they want you to do is to understand animals properly. Not make them nothing. They're a pretty fancy phenomenon. in many ways, just don't anthropomorphize them. And why? Because if you anthropomorphize them, you're not really, what you're really doing is not lifting them up, you're lowering yourself down. Okay? You're making it so that you're actively ignoring the aspects of yourself that transcend that animal. It doesn't make the animal nothing to recognize that you go way beyond the animal. The animal is really high, but you're even higher. Yeah, that to change this. Okay, and notice how they have that parenthetical insight. That's the anchor point for us. Because we have the three cosmic intuitions, that's what really gets us to transcend the moment, or even long, you know, even durations, even long-term consciousness, you know, really be able to engage the eternal. Those three cosmic intuitions, that insight, it creates this whole new anchor point, and you can go backward and forward with it. You go backward, and you can bring wisdom into existence. You go forward, and you bring foresight into existence. You want to go above legacy, tradition, and convention up to wisdom, insight, and foresight. Go above a slightly superanimal existence of legacy, tradition, and convention to a true human existence where it's wisdom, insight, and foresight. And it begins by taking delight in cultivating a relationship with the three cosmic intuitions, this new anchor point in the upper domain of the hourglass, set it down here, where you have legacy, tradition, and convention, in agitant mind, staking a new claim to three cosmic intuitions, and actually bringing wisdom and foresight into play. Okay, so that's how this, you know. That's how this is all, you know, so coming into relationship with ethics and morality like this, because they want you to remember things like I just did from very different parts of the book. Three sequences of words: legacy, tradition, convention, wisdom, insight, foresight. That's what's between the lines here. And you notice the traditional morality? The legacy, tradition, convention. Okay, traditional. That's what they mean by traditional morality. That agitant consciousness about morality that is just slightly superanimal.
Okay. Don't be impressed with these.
I mean, it's superanimal because, I mean, you're using the word morality. You know, you wouldn't have that if you didn't have the second cosmic intuition, okay? But you're not really dwelling up there. You've just gotten a little bit of a spark that there is such a thing, and then you're trying to rationalize it with your agitant mind. You're not literally up there with it. You're just playing with the shadow of it down here. Yeah. Okay.
They're saying static ethics.
That's very cool.
Right. So, yeah.
Not moving.
I mean, literally, you know, okay, so how does this work? I mean, the way this truly works, right, you know, you take your moral consciousness and then you create a code of ethics.
Okay.
Well, you want to always be doing that, but like they're saying, you want to be doing it dynamically. But if you just, it's like, okay, let's stop everything. Let's try to find our moral consciousness. Okay, I have a little snippet. Okay, give me a chisel and a stone. Okay. Wow, that really hurt to slow myself down long enough to have some moral consciousness and to hold the chisel long enough. Okay, so we don't have to ever do that again. We've got it chiseled in stone. We've translated moral consciousness into ethical consciousness and chiseled it on a stone. Yeah, we have static ethics.
Codified.
Okay. Okay. Nor is Stoicism a high order of self-realization. What do they mean by that? Basically that virtue is an end in itself. Okay. Another way you can think about that I often bring up out of paper 102, you need to do more than exhibit a creature willingness to share the inner life with goodness. You know, virtue is an end in itself. Share the inner life with God. Because mere goodness it has no survival value. See, it's not a high order of self-realization, realityizing the self, building soul substance out of self, realityizable self, soulizable self, okay, savable self, survival value, okay. You can't make soul out of a relationship with goodness. It has no, that relationship has no survival value. It's not soulizable. Why is it not soulizable? Because it's just a relationship with this block. You can only make soul out of a harmony of these three things.
Which is done by the personality.
Right. Which is truly human. Okay?
One of the things that's very common in our age that I think is so sad is that it's seen right now to be a mark of sophistication to be a naysayer, to be skeptical.
Yeah, I mean it's so sad that we've elevated the least of all those early isms, skepticism, yeah, into the greatest of them all. I mean, you know, at least we'd have something if it was stoicism. But no, it's skepticism. That's what we exalt in place of God. You know, to be skeptical is to be trans. In other words, to be a priori dismissal.
Yeah. Yeah.
To know that nothing can be known with certainty. to know that there is no such thing as that which is self-evident. To know that there is no Holy Spirit. To know that there are no cosmic intuitions. To know that there is no such thing as logical. To know that there is no such thing as moral. To know that there is no such thing as God or values.
That's
sophisticated.
They can do that.
I mean, skepticism is the most ridiculous, lazy thought you could have. And to think that that's the most sophisticated thing, it's the most juvenile, trivial thing that you could do. It's a negative consciousness.
And they take delight in cultivating that.
Right. Right. They take lots of delight in cultivating that. Yeah. All right. So, truly human. You need to be up in the upper domain of the hourglass. That's where you walk this path on earth. You know, you are in intimate relationship with the universe of motion in all of its glory, progressing, perfecting, and even harmonizing. Okay? You are actually doing something with the Father's initiation. You aren't just taking the Father's initiation and burying it in the ground because you know he's a harsh master. And when he returns, you want to be able to hand him his initiation just exactly like he gave it to you. I believe this is a parable that you know, right? Okay? Is that what you want to tell the Father? That the initiation that he gave you, you did nothing with? That you rejected the notion of the mother? There is no such thing. Okay? Is that what you want to tell him? No? That's what that parable's about. Have you taken what he's given you and invested it and begun to grow? Because the mother grows you. The mother turns the 5 bags into more bags, the 10 bags into more bags. Okay? The Father just gives you the 1, 5, or 10 bags. Okay? Only by taking delight in cultivating a relationship with the universal harmony so that you become a harmonizing phenomenon is there what you're supposed to be doing. One must do something as well as be something. One must have a relationship with the Mother as well as having a relationship with the Father. Okay. That's the fifth epical revelation. It's the fifth epical revelation finally explains what Jesus meant by that parable. Okay. not just conceptually, but literally. Like we just went through the physics of this, okay? That's what the fifth epical revelation is about. It's about, like I said, what a spirit-fused mortal is doing after they have perfected. Which, from a purely father point of view, is illogical. So, no, there isn't anything beyond perfection. Yes, everything is beyond perfection. Perfection is just the beginning of eternity. You know, you're standing on the aisle, you've just begun your relationship with eternity. You haven't completed it.
Yeah. Just a brief question. This one statement, only forward-looking and progressive attitudes are personally real. Is that, and I know when we go forth, the memories that we take with us are usually relationship-oriented and stuff that obviously are real. So much of what we do, speaking to everybody else, certainly not me, is unreal. So it's...
Mm-hmm. And how does that manifest, a slightly superanimal thing that's shaped like this? How do they go about their day-to-day life? You know, with very little relationship to the future. Well, their attitude consists largely of regretting the past, whining over the present, and vainly hoping for the future. They're just slightly superanimal. They're superanimal enough to regret the past and whine over the present and never actually really have a human relationship to the eternal so that there is a future. They live a life vainly hoping for the future. They live a life that's not truly human. And why do the heathen rage? Vainly hoping. Why would they have the section in the book about why the heathen rage? Because they want us to sit around and do like the Pharisees did. We go, look at the heathen. They're so pitiful. You know, boy, am I glad I'm not like them. Right. Do they want us to do that? Is that why they gave us the story about why do the heathen rage? So we could mock the heathen? Okay? You know, and feel so happy, self-satisfied that we're so much better than they are. No, it's a section about you and the fact that it's sad to record. That those who have spiritual consciousness, their attitude consists largely of regretting the past, whining over the present, and vainly hoping for the future. Why are they stuck in that? Because they obey not the truth. You have to do more than know the truth. The Father gave you the ability to know the truth. Have you done anything with that? You must do something as well as be something. Do you obey the truth? Are you a dynamic phenomenon like truth is? Are you flowing with the truth? Okay. Again, they tell you all this stuff in the Jesus papers so that you can understand it anew. Like mankind has never been able to understand what Jesus did. You can see it in the fifth epical revelatory context. Where you go, wait a minute, that's about me. You know? And I'm not going to be like that anymore. All my spiritually conscious friends spend their whole day regretting the past, whining over the present, and vainly hoping for the future. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not just going to use my spiritual consciousness in the negative mode as an error and evil detector. Regretting the past, whining over the present, an error and evil detector. I'm going to start obeying the truth. I'm going to take it up a notch. Okay? I want to be cognizant of perfecting and harmonizing. Okay? I want to take it up a notch. I want to feel my relationship with the mother. I want to feel my relationship with the universal harmony, the cosmos. That's the fifth epical revelation.
I've been thinking quite a bit lately, or meditating about how we figure out what is God's will. And I know we don't get a printout for that.
You remember that great little pithy sentence that the revelation gives us to rethink, well, what's the will of God? That age-old question. You know, what's God's will for me? I'll take it beyond the existential, they say. Don't just think about it so existentially. Think about it more experientially. Doing the will of God is nothing more or less than an exhibition of creature willingness to share the inner life with God. An exhibition. One must do something as well as be something. Doing the will of God, see, exhibition, obey the truth. You know, the will of God, okay, you know, in that old sense, what is the will of God? That you obey the truth. Join the universe. Be truly human. Obey truth. Don't just know truth, obey it. Combine form and spirit. Okay? Obey it. Put yourself into the form of the cosmos. Reject the God of liberty. Reject the Lucifer rebellion, where you can just do anything, okay? Because it's all about you. Obey the truth, not yourself. That's what God wants us to do. And don't just be slightly super animal. We know, they're little kids, you know, speak to this consciousness. You're not the boss of me. Okay? Is that what you say to God? That's what Lucifer said to God. Is that what you say too? Or do you say, no, I have a duty, okay, to obey the truth. Myself needs to be mastered. Myself needs to be parented. Myself needs to conform. He is the boss of you. Okay? It's just the way it is. You see, that's why this, see, all of this builds up to this thing about ethics and morality. this is where, why this bigger picture is not just an exercise in, you know, higher philosophy or physics or something. This is transformative worldview. Okay. Put yourself into this real universe. Okay. Well, unbelievably. No, it's not unbelievable. It's expected. We spent the whole time on one section again. No, we read the last little paragraph.
Did we?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, see, that last little paragraph, the human personality is not merely a concomitant of time-space events. It doesn't just ride along next to it. The human personality can also act as the cosmic cause of such events because the Father gave you personal creativity. You can cause a thread of harmonizing to come into existence. Okay? See, cosmic cause. The word cosmic means universal harmony. A harmonizing thread. See? Read the sentences precisely. They're telling you exactly, you know, what we just unpacked up above there. All right, so, and notice what we're building towards. Okay, so we have some universal over control. The part and the whole. before you get to the section on the part and the whole, it'd be really nice if there was something that they gave you that sort of motivated you to think about the individuality of the parts, the father, and the individuality of the whole, the mother. Whoops, that's what we did tonight. See? Okay. You're on the path of the truth of the revelation when you unpack it and look at that. Now it actually properly presages what follows, okay? That's what you're looking for, this living relationship with the revelation.
These guys okay. Play their sense of sequence.
All right. Let's take a moment here.